Accession number 20887, Reel 1.
Bob Kleiner, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Radomsko, Poland.
Which year was this?
1921.
Did your mother and father come from Radomska?
No, my mother came from Częstochowa. And I don't know where my father came from.
What did your father
I suppose Radomsko.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a director of a metallurgic factory. It was a French factory in Poland, one of the biggest in Europe, making spades, bridges, who knows what, screws, nails. It was a French factory belonging to Schneider-Creusot of France, you know, which was a big concern before the war.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes.
How many?
Two brothers.
Older or younger?
One younger, one older.
What was life like for you and your family in Radomska pre-war?
It was very good. We were very happy.
Which school did you go to?
A private. We used to call them gymnasiums, till matriculation.
How did you do at school?
Quite well, amazingly.
And do you remember what happened to you on the 1st of September 1939?
I was in England.
How did that
happen? I came to study in Birmingham.
Can you give me the details of all that, please?
Mechanical engineering in Birmingham.
Why did you choose that subject and Birmingham?
Well, subject, because I wanted to study mechanical engineering, and we knew somebody, my parents knew somebody who lived in Birmingham, and apparently my grandparents helped them to go to England and so on. So as I was young, my parents were a little worried, so they contacted that man in Birmingham, and he said, yes, let him come and stay with me and let him study from his house in Birmingham.
How old were you when you went to Birmingham?
1938. So it's 38 from 21 is 17, is it?
Yes.
17, 18. Like,
had you been abroad before?
Oh, yes.
Where to?
Many places. France, Belgium, Czechoslovakia.
Germany?
Germany. Yes, I went through Germany when I was coming to England. I came by train and stopped in Berlin and went for a walk.
What impression did Germany make on you at that time?
It was a little downtrodden, I thought, you know, a little. Because I traveled in the train with some German, the other passengers were Germans. And we talked about, you know, about different subjects, and as soon as I mentioned that something happened to a German or something, it was nothing to do with German-Polish relations. The woman said, no, 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 don't talk. So it was...
You got a sense of lack of freedom of speech?
Oh, yes. People were afraid to talk. I wasn't long there anyway.
What was the subject you were trying to raise with them?
I can't remember. We were talking about accidents or something.
What were your impressions of England and Birmingham in particular when you got there?
Well, I think it was the English people at that time were very insular. They didn't like foreigners. I remember the people I stayed with had a maid. She could hardly read or write. But she hated the foreigners.
Did you make that apparent to you?
Oh, well, yes, but it doesn't bother me, I mean. Uneducated, very simple woman.
What did she say to you?
I can't remember, but not about me, but generally about foreigners.
These were general rather than personal remarks?
That's right, oh yes. Not that it mattered.
How did you get on with your studies in Birmingham?
Well, I done some of it, and then I thought the war will finish without me, so I left it and volunteered.
Which institution were you studying at?
I think it was Birmingham Technical College or something like this.
How did you react to the news of the German attack on Poland on the 1st of September?
Well, I was very upset, sort of thing, but these things happen. I think we were at that time with these people on the East Coast somewhere on holiday when it happened. And we seen the ships going out to sea. It was quite an impressive view.
Warships, you mean?
Impressive, yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Neville Chamberlain, yes.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, well. Well, not that I didn't like Chamberlain. And not because he went to Munich and so on, but somehow very old-fashioned sort of a gentleman.
But
I preferred Churchill.
How did you feel about the declaration of war?
Oh, well, I thought it was right to do so.
Did the war affect you at first?
No.
What about the situation of the rest of your family in Radomska?
Radomsko.
Radomsko.
Well, the parents died during the war, but my two brothers, one went via Russia to Canada and came to England and was in the army. And the youngest one, who is now a professor of medicine at Yale in New York, never went to school, was 10 years old when the war started. And went to Germany. I don't know how he got to Germany, and he was working near Munich during the war. And I found him there after the war and brought him to England. And then we went to South Africa. And in South Africa, he's matriculated and studied medicine and went as professor to Montreal to what is called the famous university.
Yes, I know. McGill.
McGill, yes. And then from McGill, he went to America.
Can you tell me about joining up in England, please?
Well, I called the Polish embassy in London and I said, well, what about it? So they said, yes, come on. And I joined.
At the Polish embassy?
Yeah. Well, they sent me to Blackpool, but where was Polish main depot or something.
Had you had any military training?
No.
What happened to you?
Well, it wasn't military, because before the war, there was a new law that after matriculation, before you went to officer school, because if you matriculated, you were entitled to go to officer school, because the army service was compulsory. So they created a new sort of a requirement that you had to go to a labor camp for 6 weeks. And we used to dig, so we went there, and this was the first year they had it. So we were digging defenses against water along River Warta for 6 weeks.
What happened to you at Blackpool?
Blackpool, well, they sent me to to a flying school, or yes, it was first to that was in Cumberland. What is it? The big town in Cumberland.
Keswick?
No, no. On the start with the sea, with the sea.
Carlisle.
Carlisle, yes. And in Carlisle, I started to learn how to fly.
Had you wanted to become a flyer?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, they asked me what I wanted to do, and I volunteered. So I said, I want to go to the Air Force. Why? So I said, I was a pilot in Poland during the war. I wasn't, but that helped. And so they sent me to flying school.
How did you get on with flying training?
Oh, quite well.
How long did it take you to go solo?
6 hours.
What were you training in?
Magister. It was a monoplane.
Who was training you?
British flying school.
So it was an RAF flying school?
Oh, yes. And then I went on twin engine, Oxfords.
Were you speaking fluent English by then?
Oh, yes. Better than now. Now I have an accent, before I didn't.
Had you learnt English at school?
No. French, German, but English when I came. But if you stay with an English family, you soon pick it up anyway, and if you study in the language.
So what happened after you flew the Oxfords?
Went to train to Scotland. We flew on Botas, which were terrible planes, and all metal. They brought them, they were supposed to be war planes. They tried them once or twice. They used to carry one torpedo under their belly. But every time they dropped the torpedo, the plane went with it into the drink. So they stopped using them for war purposes. And we used to train air gunners who were, there was a scheme, air training scheme in Canada. When they came to England, so we used to take them for a few hours, and they were shooting at drugs and getting them used to English weather conditions. Because one minute they seen something, and the next minute it was cloud.
What happened next?
Then I went to OTU, which is Operational Training Unit, where was it? In High Erkel in Shropshire. And I got my navigator and trained on mosquitoes.
So were you to become a pilot or a navigator?
I was always a pilot. I became a pilot in Carlisle. I mean, qualified pilot.
Any incidents that happened to you in Shropshire?
No.
What date have we reached by now? 1940
or 41, something like that.
What had you thought when all the big military setbacks occurred in 1940 with the fall of France and Dunkirk and everything?
Well, I wasn't sorry for the French, because I knew they... I didn't like the French, and they never liked fighting, even taking into consideration Great War, that they did fight during the Great War, but because when we were stationed in France, after the invasion, they were very pro-German. I mean, once we used to go to a pub 3 miles from our aerodrome, and the fellow was talking against the Germans, and when the invasion, when the Ardennes happened, he put a revolver on the top there and said, "Oh, now the Germans are coming back. The Germans are coming back."
So this was a French civilian.
A pub owner.
Which part of France was that?
Near Cambrai.
So that was obviously 1944.
Probably, yes. Oh, yes.
But when the fall of France and Dunkirk occurred, did you think the Germans were going to win the war?
Not entirely. Well, we've seen how they started moving and so on, but the channel was a channel, a big barrier.
What happened to you next after your operational training unit?
We went to South Africa. I went for a year, I think, at Imperial College here. And then we went to South Africa. I didn't finish the course.
What were you studying at Imperial College?
Mechanical engineering. But I just didn't feel like studying anymore. So I gave it up and we went to South Africa.
You mean you were studying mechanical engineering when you were in the RAF?
No. Wait a minute. No, because I was demobbed in South Africa, so I had leave to study. Because they demobbed me in South Africa. Because the passages were very difficult to get ships. And so they provided a ship for me, and we got demobbed.
But that was at the end of the war, was it?
That was after the war, 1946 or 7.
But coming back to the early part of the war, did you go into a squadron?
Well, to squadron after OTU.
What?
305.
Where did you join the squadron?
In Lasham.
Where's that?
Now it's the famous glider school. Near Alton.
Alton?
Near Alton.
In Surrey?
Yes, Surrey or...
Hampshire?
Something like that. Somewhere south anyway.
What kind of airplanes did 305 Squadron have?
Mosquitoes.
Had you flown a mosquito before?
No. No, well, I mean, in OTU, of course, we had a training before we went to the squadron.
And was this an all-Polish squadron?
Mostly Polish. There were a few Englishmen. They always had a few English fellows with Polish squadrons.
What did you think of the Mosquito?
Well, nice aeroplane to look at, but very difficult to land and to take off. Because as soon as the tail gone up, or just before, it used to swing to the left. Suddenly, you were straight, and suddenly, to the left.
What caused that?
They said because the propellers were turning the same way. On every twin engine plane, they turned the same way. So I don't know. It was a fault of the plane. Because, I mean, every time we seen an aeroplane sitting on one side of the runway and the wheels on the other side of the runway, we knew that the station commander was flying. He was always losing the undercarriage. Because he landed beautifully and then suddenly, like this.
So how did you correct that?
Well, you anticipated it, opening the other engine.
And what kind of operations was the squadron carrying out in the Mosquito when you got there?
Mostly night. We were intruders, second tactical air force.
Can you explain what the intruder role was, please?
Well, we used to go for a certain time, probably an hour and a half, depends. And we had been given a triangle or an area to patrol. And we used to fly. Have we seen anything moving or so on? So we used to shoot it up. And we had four bombs, four 500-pounders, cannons and machine guns.
So you were just looking for...
trouble.
Targets of opportunity,
yes.
I was going
well,
to say.
Railways. I mean, you've seen a train going, so you used to should have the engine and so on, the train. And
did you hang around German airfields?
Oh, no. Very dangerous. They shot like blazes. We knew that we passed the German air base when you see a lot of fire coming up. But we were very low, of course. Yeah, during the day, very low. During the night, 1,000 feet. Or
what about your crew in the...
A navigator. A pilot and navigator.
Was it always the same navigator?
Yes, most of the time. But towards the end, my navigator finished the tour, his 50 trips before me, because he was in the squadron before, apparently. And then something happened, and they sent him back to OTU, where he teamed up with me.
What was his name?
Vasilchuk.
Can you tell me anything
about him? He was a warrant officer. Simple fellow, but a marvelous navigator. I mean, you know, sometimes we were going very close to the balloons. So we knew that the balloons were there. So suddenly he will say, put your other foot in now, because I was trying to keep her away. And he was cold, like cool, but fantastic navigator.
Which part of Poland did he come from?
He somewhere in the eastern Poland, with a name like Vasilchuk, that sounded Russian or Ukrainian.
Was he younger than you?
I'm allowed to say it. Slightly, maybe older, a couple of years or a year. Ended up as a greengrocer in Nottingham. Went to visit them. He's dead now, but he was a terrific navigator.
Any other personalities you recall in the squadron?
Well, we had... What was his name? Earl of Tankerville. Jim, what was his name? Anyway, he didn't fit very well.
Why not?
I don't know. He couldn't drink. Every time he drank, he was sick. And that upsets you, because whenever we didn't fly, we always drank.
What kind of things would you drink?
Oh, whiskey. Plenty. There was no ration or anything.
Did you fly when you were intoxicated?
Never. Not if I knew I'm flying the night or so, would never touch it. Could never come anywhere near it. Not worth it.
So this man was the Earl of Tankerville?
Afterwards, yes. He was Viscount first, I've forgotten about it. And when his father died, he became the Earl of Tankerville.
Who was the squadron leader?
Great. They want to see what he looks like.
Well, we can look later, not now.
I have a medal with his face on it. Famous Polish pre-war ace. He flew, he made many records. Warsaw to Tokyo, the first flight on a little aeroplane and things like that. Olinsky was his name.
What was he like as a squadron commander?
Very good. Especially, I was his constant drinking companion. When he didn't fly, we drank.
Was he a disciplinarian?
No, but very fair. After the war, he went to South Africa. And when I was in Cape Town, I met him there. And he was a taxi driver. A colonel, but a great flyer. So one day he was driving... what was his name? The British Airways chief, Sir somebody, and he recognized him. He says, "What are you doing, being a taxi driver?" He sent him to the Havilands in a factory in Canada. And he was there, and that's where he died.
Any operations you recollect?
Oh.
Can you take me through the operations you remember?
Oh, well, there are plenty. I mean, I'll tell you a story. I mean, during the night, for instance, one night, because we used to die from 2,000 feet down, even during, you know, marshalling the yards or something like this. And I was diving quite steeply, and my navigator got worried that we were too close to the ground, so he pulled my head like this up. He saw that I wasn't looking out, that I looked like this. So, and at that moment, a shell burst in front of me, so I thought a bullet just went right through my neck and exploded in front. And we went off during the, mostly at night we were flying, but we went on a raid near the Swiss frontier during the day. We burned 2 million gallons of German petrol there, tanks.
How did you know that target was there?
Well, intelligence knows. Well, we immediately we came back. We already knew the results because another mosquito, intelligent mosquito, was flying above to find out the results.
So were you just operating over France?
No, Germany, Holland. We flew, we used to go to Germany via Holland. When they flooded the whole country, you could see in moonlight, it looked fantastic. You just see water, water, water over Holland.
This is when the Germans flooded?
Yes, they were retreating, so they flooded Walcheren.
And
I'll tell you another story. You're not supposed to talk on the radio. And I was very naughty. I pressed the button. I said, Adolf Hitler is ein Schweinhund. Immediately, in perfect Oxford accent, comes, and so you are, old boy. Better English than mine. So they were listening to. That's why we are not supposed to talk.
And were you always operating from Lasham?
No, no. We moved then to Hartford Bridge, and then we moved to France.
After D-Day?
Yes.
And you were still flying the same Mark of Mosquito all the time?
Yes, I suppose so. They changed, they called them Mark 10 or Marks. They changed the propellers or something like this. And
where were you based in France?
Epinoy, near Cambrai.
Is that where you developed a dislike for French people?
No, no, I knew French people from before the war.
And had you not liked them then?
No, they were very, they were not true, you know, very false. And oh, I have a French cousin. I mean, Polish French. He was a captain in the French army. He was in the Marquis. But and he turned completely like a Frenchman. I don't like him anymore.
What kind of facilities did you have at Epinoy?
Well, we took over a German aerodrome, existing aerodrome, airfield. And like the British, the first thing they did, all the perimeter, the Germans had machine guns and guns and so on to protect the airfield. The British came, they stuck all the guns together in nice stacks, bundles like this, and that's the first standing there. Instead of, well, I suppose they had their own rifles and so on, but
and
then of course the, at one stage, you know, the panic came in. There were even German soldiers dressed as nuns. They dropped them near our aerodrome during the Ardennes.
How did you know that?
Well, we were told that that they caught one or something. Or
were you operating in support of the ground forces once you were in France?
Yes, in Falaise, when they were closing on the German army unit, whole corps. Yes, sometimes, but we were freelancers. unless, of course, we went to a specific target like the petrol or something.
What kind of targets did you find in Falaise Gap?
Well, we were bombing bridges and with